Greetings and welcome to another episode. Let's get right into it. Remember watching the Jetsons? Well, it's real.
Imagine a world where your daily commute involves soaring above traffic in a sleek, electric flying vehicle. That's not just a fantasy anymore. It's the reality Jetson is building. The article dives into the debut of the Jetson One personal aircraft in a competitive race format, held during the UP Summit 2025. These vehicles, known as EVTOLs, electric vertical takeoff and landing, are lightweight, battery-powered, and designed for individual use. They look like something out of the Jetsons or Star Wars, but they're very real and already flying. You should know about this because it signals a massive shift in how we think about mobility. For decades, flying cars were a punchline or a pipe dream. Now, companies like Jetson are turning that dream into a tangible experience. This isn't just about cool tech. It's about solving real problems. Traffic congestion, long commutes, and limited access to remote areas could all be addressed with personal aerial vehicles. If you live in a city plagued by gridlock or in a rural area with poor infrastructure, this technology could dramatically improve your quality of life. This innovation could help people you know in ways you might not expect. Emergency responders could reach disaster zones faster. Elderly or disabled individuals might gain new independence. Even recreational use, imagine weekend getaways by air, could become more accessible. And for tech enthusiasts or entrepreneurs, this opens a whole new industry ripe for exploration, from pilot training to air traffic management systems tailored for personal flights. Society could be transformed by this. Think about how cars reshaped cities in the 20th century. Roads, suburbs, shopping centers, all designed around the automobile. Now imagine cities reimagined for vertical mobility. Rooftop landing pads, aerial highways, and decentralized commuting hubs could become the norm. It's not just a transportation revolution. It's an architectural and cultural one. There are other important things to keep in mind. Safety and regulation will be key. As thrilling as the Jetson race was, widespread adoption will require robust systems to prevent collisions, ensure pilot competency, and manage airspace. Environmental impact is another factor. While these vehicles are electric, their production and energy sources must be sustainable to truly benefit the planet. Finally, accessibility matters. Right now, Jetson One is sold out for 2024 and 2025, and it's priced for early adopters. But as with smartphones and electric cars, prices will drop and availability will expand. What seems elite today could be mainstream tomorrow. So when you hear about Jetson's aerial race, don't just think cool gadget. Think about revolution. Think opportunity. Think about how your world might look when the sky becomes your highway.
So, what's up with the Vatican?
The Vatican's announcement to repatriate a collection of cultural treasures, including items like an Inuit kayak, from its Anima Mundi ethnographic museum back to indigenous communities in Canada. These artifacts were taken or gifted during colonial periods and have spent decades locked away in museum vaults, far from the communities that created them. The move follows years of negotiation and is part of the Catholic Church's reckoning with its role in suppressing indigenous culture, especially through residential schools. You need to know this because it's not just about returning objects. It's about restoring dignity. These items carry stories, traditions, and spiritual significance. Their absence has been a wound in the cultural memory of indigenous peoples. By returning them, the Vatican is acknowledging that these communities deserve to reclaim their heritage, their history, and their voice. This is especially important in a world where colonial legacies still shape power structures and cultural narratives. This helps people you know by setting a precedent. It tells museums, governments, and institutions that restitution is not optional, it's necessary. It empowers indigenous youth to see their culture honored rather than hidden. It also opens doors for education, healing, and pride. When these artifacts return, they won't just sit in display cases. They'll be part of ceremonies, storytelling, and community life again. This can change society by shifting how we value cultural ownership. For centuries, Western institutions have treated indigenous artifacts as curiosities or trophies. This repatriation flips that script. It says, these items belong to the people who made them. It challenges the idea that history is written only by the powerful and invites a more inclusive, respectful approach to heritage and memory. For people of color, this moment resonates deeply. It proves that the fight for cultural justice is not in vain. Whether you're Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, or part of any marginalized group, you know what it means to have your history distorted, erased, or stolen. The Vatican's gesture, while symbolic, is a recognition that those histories matter. It's a crack in the wall of institutional silence. It's a reminder that reparations, though complex, are possible. You should also know that this isn't the end, it's a beginning. The repatriation process must be handled with care. As Indigenous leaders have pointed out, these items are sacred. Their return must involve ceremony, respect, and community leadership. And more artifacts remain in museums around the world. This act should inspire further restitution, not just from the Vatican, but from every institution holding cultural property taken during colonial rule. So, when you hear about the Vatican returning these artifacts, don't just see it as a headline. See it as a turning point. See it as proof that justice can be pursued, that history can be corrected, and that communities long denied their heritage are finally being heard.
Actatans.
You've probably heard stories about ancient cities vanishing due to mysterious plagues. Akhetaten, the short-lived capital of Pharaoh Akhenaten, was one of those tales. For centuries, historians believe that a deadly epidemic swept through the city, forcing its abandonment shortly after Akhenaten's death in 1332 BC. But this new study, led by Gretchen R. Dabbs and Anna Stevens, flips that narrative. By analyzing skeletal remains and archaeological records, they found no clear signs of epidemic disease. Instead, the bones tell a story of intense physical labor and malnutrition. Why should you care about a city that disappeared over 3,000 years ago? Because it shows how easily history can be misunderstood and how those misunderstandings shape our view of the past. Akhenaten wasn't just any pharaoh. He revolutionized Egyptian religion by promoting monotheism, worshiping the sun god Aten, and building Akhetaten as a spiritual center. The idea that his city collapsed due to divine punishment or plague has long been used to discredit his radical ideas. But if the real cause was economic strain or political instability, then the story becomes one of human struggle, not divine retribution. This matters to you and people you know because it's a reminder to question the stories we're told, whether they're about ancient history or current events. Misinterpretations can lead to myths that persist for generations. In this case, the myth of the plague of Akhetaten may have obscured deeper truths about how societies collapse under pressure. That's a lesson that applies today, especially as we face global challenges like climate change, inequality, and political unrest. If society embraces this kind of critical re-examination, it could change how we teach history, how we interpret archaeological evidence, and how we understand the rise and fall of civilizations. It encourages a more nuanced view, one that looks beyond dramatic explanations and considers the lived experiences of ordinary people. The skeletal remains from Amarna show signs of hard labor and poor nutrition, not mass death from disease. That's a powerful insight into the social conditions of the time. You should also know that this study is part of a broader trend in archaeology and bioarchaeology. Researchers are using new techniques to analyze bones, burial patterns, and historical texts with greater precision. This allows them to challenge old assumptions and build more accurate pictures of the past. It's not just about rewriting history. It's about understanding humanity more deeply. So next time you hear about a lost city or a vanished civilization, think twice before accepting the simplest explanation. The truth might be more complex, more human, and more relevant to your world than you ever imagined.
Energy.
This article highlights a major leap in sustainable technology. Norway's success in producing energy from floating platforms, not just with solar panels, but with something more. Spearheaded by the Norwegian startup Alotta, This initiative goes beyond traditional solar farms by integrating hybrid floating solar systems that combine solar generation with battery storage. These platforms float on water, making use of underutilized surfaces like lakes, fjords, and coastal zones. It's a bold move that reflects Norway's deep commitment to clean energy and its maritime expertise. You should know about this because it's not just a cool innovation. It's a practical solution to some of the biggest challenges in energy today. Land is scarce, especially in densely populated or agriculturally vital regions. Floating solar systems bypass that issue entirely. They also reduce water evaporation and can even improve panel efficiency due to the cooling effect of the water. That means more power, less land use, and smarter resource management. This could help you and people you know in several ways. If you live in a coastal city or near large bodies of water, floating solar could become a local energy source, reducing reliance on fossil fuels and lowering electricity costs. For industries like aquaculture, which is huge in Norway, these systems offer a way to power operations sustainably. In fact, Alata's floating solar plant is already being used to power fish farms, cutting down on diesel use and emissions. On a societal level, this changes the game. It shows that renewable energy isn't limited to deserts or mountaintops. It can be deployed almost anywhere. That opens the door for countries with limited land but abundant water to join the clean energy revolution. It also signals a shift toward modular, decentralized energy systems, which are more resilient and adaptable than traditional grids. Imagine a future where communities generate their own power from nearby lakes or reservoirs, storing excess energy for cloudy days or peak demand. There's more you should know. Norway's floating energy systems aren't just about solar. They're part of a broader trend toward hybridization. That means combining solar with wind, wave, or even kinetic energy technologies. These platforms could evolve into multi-source energy hubs, harvesting power from every available element. And with battery integration, they can store energy efficiently, smoothing out supply and demand fluctuations. This innovation also has global implications. As climate change intensifies and energy demand grows, we need scalable, sustainable solutions. Floating energy systems offer just that. They are adaptable, environmentally friendly, and increasingly cost-effective. Norway's success could inspire other nations to invest in similar technologies, accelerating the transition to a cleaner, more equitable energy future.
All righty. Thanks for hanging with us another week. And until next time, when we meet at the crossroads.